You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks. Welcome to the show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the very, very first time, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. Be sure you go over to kevinsmithshow.com and check out everything that's there. While you're there, be sure that you click on that big link, you know, the big red letters that say K-Files E-Zine, because that's where you can subscribe free to our free weekly newsletter. It's truly free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and there are no strings attached. This is going to be an interesting evening. It has been a very interesting weekend here at the studio. It's been very interesting because my hosting company, you know, the people where my website is, they've been switching things around apparently. First of all, you know, we had that deal last week where the cable went down, and so I couldn't even get on the internet at all. Well, then we got the cable back up. That's good. That was not us. That was someone else. That was our cable provider. Well, now the hosting company, they've been switching stuff around. And there's no problem with the broadcast, but we are sort of crippled in doing some other things. They apparently began doing this right after we sent out the HTML version of the K-Files e-zine. And then we were not able to send out the text version. So those of you who are subscribed to the older text version did not get a K-Files e-zine, and the reason is we could not send it. It just wouldn't work. And then they got that fixed sometime today, and they changed a couple of things having to do with FTP, and that is, of course, how we upload files. And right at this moment, we are not able to upload a thing. I was able to get a show description up, and after that, it was gone. I couldn't upload anything else. Now, why does that matter? Well, just a small thing right there below where it says, where you click to listen, live, you know, you choose broadband or dial-up, right? And right below that, it says now playing. Well, we have a little program that every 5 seconds, it checks to see what is playing. And it generates a file that it then uploads with the title and the artist, or the artist and the title. It works, but something at the hosting company is messed up. And we can't upload anything. So the last thing that you see there, the last thing that it was able to upload was entitled Today, and that's last night's show. I don't know after the show tonight whether we're going to be able to upload tonight's show tonight. We'll have to wait and see. I've been complaining and negotiating and prodding and urging since 4 o'clock this afternoon, and I still can't upload anything. Oh, well. My guest this evening is Daryl Sims. Dr. Michio Kaku was to be with us today, and I will explain why he's not here today. He will be here later in the week. When we come back from this break, I'll tell you all about it.
10, 9.
Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring 5 of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
How much will you care?
You know, there's never been a better time for you to start your own broadcast. I know there are a lot of paranormal investigators. I know there are a lot of people who are paranormal experiencers who want to have their own broadcast. Well, now you can right here at Steel Eye Media Network. It is within your grasp. You can do it, and we're waiting to hear from you. Give us a call today at 1-800-318-1008. My guest this evening is Daryl Sims. Now, I promised you that I would explain to you the shuffling of our schedule right after the break. So let me do that as we prepare to welcome Daryl onto the show. We had to shuffle the schedule around this week. Dr. Michio Kaku was to be with us tonight. He is in the United States. He has just arrived from Japan and arrived with a cold and a sore throat, and very graciously asked that we reschedule him. He said he would do the show if we just could not reschedule, but that it really would be better for him if we could reschedule. So we've shuffled things around, and in the shuffling, I also happened to receive an email from Daryl. He's not been with us for quite some time, and he's been busy moving as well. Welcome back to the show, Daryl.
Hello. Good to be here.
You know, you're in the process of moving, aren't you? In fact, you just kind of moved today, didn't you?
Well, we just got back from a trip. We've been gone for 5 days to a conference that we've been working in commercial real estate, and we also have actually moved as well. So that's still actually in process.
Daryl, you know, one of the things that's happened fairly recently, I mean, within the past past month, is this big news about the UFO flap down in Stephenville. Now, the actual sightings began taking place around early January, but it hit the news about a month ago big. It sort of creeped into the news before that, and then it really hit big about a month ago. And one of the things that I really kind of would like to get you to comment on is, and I know you haven't been personally involved in investigating the Stephenville case as of yet. I don't know if you're going to, but one of the things that you focus on is let's get to the nuts and bolts of the evidence. Now, as you look at that case, just from what you've seen, what do you think about that? I mean, I'm not asking, do you think it happened? I know it happened. But what do you think? Your general overall impression, is that extraterrestrial or is that U.S. military super secret, top secret squirrel stuff? Or, you know, what's going on there?
Well, from everything I've been able to ascertain just by looking at the evidence that has come in and testimony from others in the case, such as a police officer who witnessed the event and others who were later ridiculed and said they basically said they saw a flight of airplanes. They all just had tongue in cheek when they heard that one, because I think they know the difference between an airplane and what it was they were watching. They didn't know what the object was they were watching, but they certainly knew what an airplane was. And a police officer coming forward to testify like that is pretty remarkable, because usually cops generally don't, and you know this as well as I do, don't come forward unless there's a real good reason. They're compelled to, either by court, but generally they're not going to stick their neck out for anything if they don't have to. And for them to do this was pretty remarkable.
What do you think would compel a police officer to come forward? By the way, he was on the show, and it was from my point of view, my opinion, it was a knockout show.
He came on and just talked very matter-of-factly about what he saw. And when I brought up the idea that it was airplanes or flares or something like that, he sort of chuckled and he said, no, it definitely was not that.
Well, then for the Air Force then to come back on later and say, because these people described, some of them described airplanes chasing the UFO or being up in the area with it. And for the military then to say, oh, yeah, we didn't have any airplanes, but now we decide we do. And, yeah, they were in the area. And that's what this was all about. You saw airplanes. Well, the only problem with that is for a squadron commander out there to not know where his airplanes were at. That just doesn't work. You get fired for things like that. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
They were at.
Yeah, and you know the thing about it is the people that the witnesses that said we saw airplanes chasing this thing. Those were pilots, and pilots know what airplanes look like.
They tend to know that. It to me, smacked at another event that happened back in 1952, where UFOs literally went over the Capitol building, the most guarded space probably on the face of the planet. And that went on for nearly a week, and pilots were sent up there. In fact, we even have the videoed testimony of one of them who actually did go up there and face the UFOs, and the fact that he was later threatened by his own officers and told that he didn't see anything that he saw and was threatened with a fine for up to $10,000 and possible imprisonment. So he gave up his career as an officer and a pilot and became a commercial airline pilot. And when he finally finished his tour there and retired, he came forward and contacted me in Houston and said, I'm ready to talk, and gave a whole entire interview on it. But we also had one of my abductees was part of an anti-aircraft.
Let's clarify something. Let's clarify something for people who are listening for the first time and may not be familiar with you. When you say one of my abductees, that doesn't mean somebody you abducted.
That's probably true. Abductee, generally, when we refer to that, is people that we work with in this phenomena. And our primary interest is in looking at physical evidence and real testimony, such as the police officer gave to you on your program. People who are credible, and abductees and people who have had these type of contacts, in our view, their events, many of these events are in fact true, many of them we've looked at, and we of course found plenty that weren't. But the fact is we also found physical evidence in these, and some of the best evidences to me overall in terms of mass was in the time of 1952 where UFOs came over the Capitol building. Very much like this Stephenville event, it was witnessed by virtually everybody was looking up. And this just smacks at stupidity of any government or any group of people telling people that they didn't see what they saw when it was filmed by the military themselves, and they finally released a film of it.
Well, and the photograph of it appeared on, I think it was Life or Look, one or the other, magazine, which at that time, both Life and Look were extremely popular magazines all over this country. And I think it was Look magazine that it was on. I can't remember, but it was right on the front cover. And very, very popular. Of course, 1952, that was the year dirt was invented, and I was born the next year. And I'm sorry?
Dirt was definitely invented then.
But my dad had kept a copy of the magazine. And when I was about 6 years old, I don't know how it came about, but I saw the magazine and was asking questions about it. And so I've seen that photograph on that magazine. So, you know, they finally did release the photos. But in the beginning, they said what?
Well, they talked about the lights over the Washington, D.C. What they didn't tell you that we had three anti-aircraft roving units that were on ground, and from the best evidence that we have to date, and I mean from military and other witnesses, the United States government thought they might be under attack from an alien presence, and that is just a fact of it.
Did they fire on those craft?
The particular pilots that we talked to did not fire on them. They were frightened and bewildered by what they saw. They said that whatever was up there, so it could outfly, could outmaneuver us in every way, every shape. He said we couldn't even get near them. Now, we have reports from other people that the other pilots that were also involved, there were more than just these two sets of pilots, were up there. It did have a confrontation with them, and we don't know all the details because obviously we weren't there. But one of the things I was very interested about was verifying what I could about this individual who claimed to be there. And I told him, I said, well, that's a great story. The only problem is I need to verify the whole thing. And he says, I'm sure you would. And I said, do you have your flight logs for that night? And he said, yes, I do. He did provide those. He did provide me photography of himself with the aircraft that he flew. Everything checked out for where he was. His flight logs reflect exactly what he said in his story.
Do you have copies of those flight logs now?
Sir?
Do you have copies of those flight logs?
I have a copy of yes, I do. I most certainly do. I was not going to let him get away with that one. So, and then he gives his entire testimony on tape and took questions. And I was just very impressed, very, very stand-up guy. The biggest problem he had with the event wasn't the UFO. The biggest problem he had, and I'm quoting him here, and I'm quoting loosely, not word for word, his biggest problem wasn't the UFOs and whatever they were. The biggest problem was when he got back on the ground and was debriefed. He in one room and his co-pilot in the other room, and was asked these questions. What did you see? And on that July 26, 1952, what did you see? And he told his story, and they listened to it thoroughly, questioned him at great length, and they looked at him and said, no, you didn't. And if you tell that story again, you can be fined up to $10,000 and imprisoned. He said, Nobody threatens me after telling me to fly up there and face something like that, and then I come back down here, and then they threaten me and tell me I didn't see it. And so, of course, he got the obvious sense that there was something else going on up there that we didn't have much control over, and it obviously it bothered him. What he didn't know is that, as I mentioned, we had three anti-aircraft units on the ground. We actually thought we were under attack, and there's good evidence to support that idea.
You have gathered a lot of forensic evidence. One of the things that people need to know about you is that your background is you're a cop. You're military, you're ex-CIA covert ops. And you have put that to work for you, that background, and the skills that you gained. In that background, you've put that to work for you in gathering evidence, forensic evidence, of extraterrestrial presence. So, and in fact, you've written a book about that, and there are a lot of pictures in the book of various pieces of evidence. One of the things that I think is very important is a handprint on the wall that's very non-human. In appearance. As you have gathered all of this over the years, have you come to a conclusion as to whether we are being visited by extraterrestrials, or is it still up in the air, so to speak? We still don't know.
Well, we don't. The thing, there's a lot we do know, and there are some things we don't know. And we can certainly address the things we do know, and we can speculate about the things we don't know. What we do know is that some presence is here in the form of an entity I don't, still don't know what an alien is, and I mean, you know, I use the term alien because many people use that term in a loose sense of the word, thinking they must, therefore, if they are alien, they must be extraterrestrial. Well, that's not necessarily true. They could be extraterrestrial. They could be from another dimension. They could be something else. They're, the evidence to me supports more of an extra dimensional or other dimensional entities taking place in three-dimensional time. I think that they're vulnerable, as an example, when they're here in this dimension. When they're in transit, I think they're least vulnerable. But the fact is that, and Roswell, I think, kind of illustrates the point, and other cases where craft or objects related to them seem to either have crashed either accidentally or been shot down, or, in my view, crashed on purpose for other purposes, for intelligence reasons on their behalf. But the point is that there is pretty good evidence that there is a presence there, and as in any presence, they're doing their covert ops, whatever that may be. And we, again, that's speculation. We don't know all of that. But we do have a pretty strong sense based on our military intelligence. And especially people that are retiring, these baby boomers like myself that are retiring out there, and they're coming forward telling just amazing things because they're no longer afraid of the government. They don't think they're going to get threatened or put in prison or anything like that for telling their story. So this stuff is getting pretty interesting. What we don't know is, who are they? Why are they ultimately here? They, the entities, like an intelligence community, keeps their cards very close to their vest. They do not give out that kind of information.
You know, we're about 3 minutes from break. There's a big segment of the UFO community, if we want to call it that, that believes that the extraterrestrials or other dimensional terrestrials or whatever they are coming here to help us, and everything is wonderful and peace and love and light. But we hear a lot of stories, and by the way, I'm in no way am I saying that that's foolishness, because I think maybe some of them fit that description, because we hear stories from people who have who claim to have had contact with them. Up close and personal. But we also hear a lot of stories that are otherwise, and that don't seem so wonderful and lovely and sweet. They seem a little sinister. So what do you think about that? We've got 2 minutes here till break. In that 2 minutes, what do you think about that?
Well, basically, Kevin, I think that that they're two groups of people that are primarily reporting these events. One, they're called abductees, which are people are, by definition, our generic definition, they're people taken against their will and do not feel those events were positive, uplifting, or for their benefit. It, to them, is kidnapping, and kidnapping is a crime. Then there's another group of people that are taken, and according to some of the better evidence we have, and it's not exclusive to this, but a good many of these people, in my opinion, have been hoodwinked. Many of these are referred to as contactees, and they think their events were the positive, uplifting, or whatever. It doesn't mean that some of their events weren't, in fact, positive. They very well may have been, and for a particular specific reason. The bottom line is, who are all the players out there doing this? Are there some good guys involved out there? There apparently are. There seem to be a lot more that aren't, and they seem to be fairly well networked together. And we can discuss more of that later if you want to.
Yeah, I'd like for us to get into how we know they're networked together. We don't have time before this break. But, yeah, I think it's important for us humans, as we look at this entire phenomenon, I think it's important to realize that there may be some good guys in the bunch and there may be some bad guys in the bunch, and it doesn't behoove us to make sweeping speculations with a broad brush and paint them all good or paint them all evil.
I agree.
Do you think that, well, I'll hold that question until we get back from break, because break is about to take over. Again, this evening, my guest is Daryl Sims, the alien hunter. He is formerly a cop, all right? Formerly military police and formerly CIA covert ops, top secret clearance. And we're talking about the forensic evidence. What does it say about E.T.? We'll be back. We are back, and we're talking with Daryl Sims. We're talking about the forensic evidence involved in these extraterrestrial or alleged extraterrestrial contacts. Now, let me say, Daryl, and you know this, just by me saying alleged extraterrestrial contacts, there are loads of people out there that all of a sudden become emotional, and they say, oh, he doesn't believe. You're right. I don't. I am not a believer. I am not a disbeliever. I am looking for evidence and truth. That's all. And I don't think, you've heard me say this many, many times, I do not think that UFOs or extraterrestrials call upon any of us for faith. There's either evidence or there's not. And if there is, there is. If there's not, there's not. And so when we say alleged contact, what I'm saying is that there are people who say they have had contact with extraterrestrials. And then those who are investigators, like yourself, have to look for evidence that supports it or the lack of evidence. Now, in that, you've come across a lot of very interesting bits of evidence, but you mentioned before the break that they seem to be fairly well networked together. And I'm interested in the evidence for that. What makes you say they are networked together?
Well, there's several reasons that that I mentioned this. Not the least of which is I'll set this up this direction that I think it'll make more sense. In 1992, we decided to do an experiment. Late 1991 in December. That's not true. I'm not telling you the truth here. I'm getting my times mixed up. 1992. It was in November, the month prior. I decided that if these entities were in fact acting like an intelligence community, maybe they do that for a purpose. I may be just conjecturing this. I mean, like you, we don't know. It is alleged because we don't know for sure about all the details. I do know some things because I was there in my own abduction events, so I do know those things happen. But the fact is that most of UFO investigators out there are not, in fact, abductees or contactees and can't make those statements. They simply don't know. Their best information is what they read or what they find or what they can best, like yourself especially, rely upon their own policing abilities and their own skills to determine. And using the word alleged is an excellent term because it has nothing to do with faith. It has to do with evidence. If we can't convict people on, I believe he killed someone. You just can't do that.
I think he might be thinking about killing someone. You can't arrest somebody on that.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that. What if somebody looked at you, the nice person, and said, I think you're nuts. Therefore, I think you should be interned in a mental hospital. Our system just doesn't work like that, and we don't do that. But what I did do is take my thesis that they function like an intelligence community, and the reason I thought that, it wasn't a guess. It was a thesis based upon the fact I'd already been in the intelligence community, and what I learned there had already been happening to me on a grand scale, and apparently to other people. So I decided to run a test, and I ask a contactee, that's a person who likes these guys and thinks whatever's happening to them is probably toward their best benefit. This is not an abductee, somebody more slanted toward my ilk, but someone who actually likes these guys. And I thought that would be an excellent way to start this. So this contactee volunteered for the program, and the contactee said, I'll do anything to help you in your research. You've never charged us a penny. Everything you do is philanthropic. We love you. You're a great guy, and you support all of us, abductee or contactee. I said, that's true. So the individual says, what do you want? And I said, what I want you to do is volunteer for a program that I can't tell you anything about. I'm going to put it on film, and I'm going to just give you some information, and then I'm going to induce amnesia so you can't know that it's there. She looks at me kind of funny, says, okay. And I said, are you inclined to agree with this? She says, yes. And I said, sleep. And she just fell over. And I put this all on film. I had an assistant there with me. And what I did, I installed a piece of information in her memory, as in her brain, as if it were memory. I did this on purpose because I'd found this information from another abductee, and he inadvertently found this out, and he should not have found it out from them. It was a mistake on their part. But my question was, is it really good intel? You don't know until you test it. What I did was to install it in her as a in this way, and I installed amnesia on the front side so she could never, ever know it was there. Then I installed it on the back side of the memory so that they couldn't find out where she got it, even if they did hear it, which I wanted them to. that I want to see if they had a reaction to this. Long story short, she gets picked up about every 30, 40 days or so, and they got her again in about 2 weeks. As soon as they got her, she was going through her normal abduction stuff, and she was walking toward him, and all of a sudden, this is amazing, when she gets within 20 inches of him, which is where I set the post-hypnotic suggestion to go off, she pops completely out of this trance state that they seem to put us in, where they have us under enormous control. She pops out completely, totally in her own right mind, her own control, standing in front of him, startles the little guy, and she looks at him and blurts out this information. He was horrified. She said, "Daryl, I've been abducted." She said, "I'm 33 years old. I've been abducted since I was three." She said, "In 30 years, I've never seen an emotion on his face until then." He was horrified. And she says, "Whatever I told him," she said, "he seems to have taken that to heart and it was upset by it," which tells me, number one, that these entities probably have a hive mentality like a computer network, and that when one of them gets the data, they're all going to get it. Two, when they took her away, we didn't know a great deal about this until after the fact. I'm telling you this after we found all this information out. They came back on December 8th and December 11th in a double mass abduction on those two nights to her city in Florida and to Houston and abducted eight of our people in two states and several cities. In this mass abduction, this is if the story is true, and I leave that up to your audience to decide whether it is or isn't. If the story is true, it is an astounding piece of work, and here's why. The case shows that the entity showed up with a craft that was probably, according to witnesses, contactee and abductee, both, about 50 miles thick and about 600 miles across. Now, when an engineer, my senior investigator, came to me, and he was one of the abductees in this mass abduction event, told me about the size of the craft, I told him, I said, "I've got a serious problem with this story. Not with you people, but that the size of the craft is just, I mean, that's just monstrous. I just can't." And he said, "I thought you'd say that, so I brought the video."
What?
I said, "I beg your pardon?" He said, "I brought the video." I said, "What video?" He said, "I did some additional research after this event, because it was so astounding, that," he said, "a Japanese astronomer was filming the moon during the time of December 8th and December 11th, 1992, during the mass abductions. You'll never guess what he has on film. A craft of immense size going between the Earth and the moon, casting its shadow upon the moon. And it looks just like what he describes. The thing is monstrous. It's huge. It's not a meteorite."
All right, now let's pause there for a moment. He showed you the video of this thing.
He showed me the video of a Japanese astronomer filming between Earth and Moon during the time of the mass abduction, and a huge craft, which these people describe. They describe small craft taking them up to the big one.
Okay, but the huge craft is on video.
That is correct, sir.
And you have it?
That is correct, sir.
And have you ever put it out for people to see?
It actually was on the show Sightings at one time. That, of course, that program's off the air now, but it was a very popular UFO show. And, in fact, they interviewed my senior investigator at one time over this event. And many, they were just stunned at the... Not just the fact that we had this film footage from this Japanese astronomer, but what was more incredible is the physical evidence left in this case by these abductees, to wit. My senior investigator, again, who's an engineer, on his home, when they come to pick him up, he describes a bright blue light that hit his roof and that area, because when he came out, there it was. A UFO was above, and this blue light was there. When I go to his home the next morning, the soft aluminum siding on the fascia of his home has totally been extracted with no forcible sign. This aluminum is so soft that it will scratch or cut or damage in any way if you tamper with it. You have to be very careful even applying it.
We've only got about 30 seconds until the next break. And I don't want to get into more of that story and then have to interrupt it at a really crucial point. So I'm going to ask you to just hang on to that, the aluminum siding, something happened to it. And when we come back from this break, we'll find out what happened. All right. Now what do you think about that, folks? I mean, that's just astounding, isn't it? I want to see that video, Daryl. I want to see it. I don't recall ever having seen it, but I would love to see that video. We'll be back right after this break. Do not go away. You'll miss an entire universe of information. Did you know The Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcast right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith Shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download.
Welcome back, and we're talking with Daryl Sims. Daryl,
when we had to cut away, you were telling us about your chief investigator, who is an engineer, and the last time he got abducted, or this time when he got abducted, there was a big blue light that came down on the roof of his house, and something happened to the siding, and we're talking about that as forensic evidence.
The light that shone down on his house seemed to create an effect in the home. Now, as you know, evidence means everything to me. Stories are interesting, but evidence is the teller of the tale. It's one thing for you to say, I witnessed a murder. It's another thing for the body to actually be somewhere. I mean, I like to see evidence. I mean, if something happened, let's see the beef. I want to see it. In this case, I went to his home, and he had not touched anything. He said, look at this. And the entire 16-foot piece of fascia, aluminum fascia, very soft metal, painted metal, was complete. The nails had been extracted by some force I do not know of. I just don't know how that could have happened. The nails are all laying in a row down his house as the metal is laying on the side of the roof as well. This is in the area where Dale describes the blue light area. And he also, I went up on the roof and I took pictures of all this, of course, and took samples of the nails and everything else. And I took, I looked at the, he had a brand new roof on it, a three-ply roof, for those of you who know what that is or don't know. It's a very heavy tri-layered roofing. It's very, very effective, and this is brand new. And the difficulty is all the nails in that area are being pulled up through the roof as if it were some magnetic force were pulling the nails back up through the roofing from beneath where it was nailed. This was most curious, and again, we photographed and documented that. And he took me inside his home. We walked up the stairwell. He's turn your phone on, and you can't. You get static in the stairwell. In the stairwell, again, over the area where the blue light supposedly was, there are 17 places on both sides of the wall in the stairwell where the sheetrock, the nails, have been pulled out again as if there were some magnetic force pulling them out sideways, and where it even broke the sheetrock in places. As we went up to his room, he describes the place where he was taken and everything. And the most stunning part of this entire story, we don't find out until about several years after the fact. After the story is all over, he calls me one night and says, you need to get over here immediately. He said, bring a witness. So I brought my wife, and I said, okay, why are we here? His wife, who is a very nice lady, but doesn't have any real interest in the UFO phenomenon at all, is sitting on the couch, and he says, you need to see this. And I start turning the camera on. She says, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to record this conversation. She says, no, you're not. And I said, yes, I am. Now, you got to understand, we're all friends and have been for years. But she's a pretty tough cookie, just about like I am. And I said, yeah, I am. I'm just going to turn this on for a minute. And so, well, I don't like that little red light on it, so I put a little black piece of tape over it.
That works.
And she just laughs, says, I can't believe you're doing that. And I said, yeah, I know. Isn't that great? And she told the most astounding story. She describes, now you got to understand, she had not heard his story and didn't want to. She's not interested in this stuff. She describes being awake the night of the mass abduction. And they, when they came in and got him, describes the entity exactly as he did. She said it was very strange. She said that they'd never seen the entity with a harness utility-type belt on before. They usually come in without clothing or anything, and they're just strange little skinny little guys that haul you off, so to speak, like a pizza delivery man. They just taking the pizza back, I guess. So she describes this in great detail, goes through this. She's arguing with them. I mean, this is, the whole thing is just amazing. if I told you this whole story, I assure you that I have a problem with it. I mean, it's just amazing. But if the evidence wasn't there, I wouldn't be believing this. The evidence just supports it, and it supports it from 8 different people in 2 states and several cities. The point is that this story got better simply because the evidence got better. We also found that one of the abductees claimed, again, all of these people have been separated from each other. They do not get to talk to each other. Nobody knows anything except what they know. But they all describe each other being in the same event, the same place. They describe the texture of the walls identical in the place they were taken to, immense size. To answer your question, how do you know or why do you think these entities may be in cahoots with each other or at least have some type of network that they, database or something they function off of? Well, there are several reasons, but this is kind of one of the big ones. Of all the the various entities describing the UFO phenomena, the little gray guy, the little guy that looks like him, it's a little taller and a lot smarter, tall, often referred to as a doctor, the sometimes the Bigfoot-type character shows up, sometimes the human Nordic type, which are not just blonde-haired, they're also red and black hair as well, and other entities show up. Well, Dale's been called in, not in front of the normal characters. All the normal characters are all there at the same time, lined up in front of a guy sitting in a big chair. Now, the guy sitting in the big chair, which is an entity as well, but different from these guys, represents something higher than they are. The amazing thing is, Dale describes the entity standing to his left. He said, he starts laughing, being an engineer. I mean, this is really far out for him. I mean, but he remembers a lot of these events. But he says, it's just so strange. He said, I'd never seen this before. I said, saw what? He said, well, there's a little gray guy. And he said, there was the doctor type standing there. He said, there was a human type. It was about 6'6". He said, and standing next to him, there was something. He laughed, and I said, what? And he said, it looks like a Wookiee. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I guess most people would call it a Bigfoot. He said, it kind of funny to me. He said, it looked like a big hairy Wookiee to me. And he said, it was as taller than the 6'6" guy standing there, the humanoid type. He said, but all these entities are standing there. Well, what are they all doing in the same room at the same time, at the same place, tall in front of this hot shot sitting in the big chair?
And what did the hot shot in the chair look like?
Well, we've kept that quiet from everybody. And the reason I did this is because, again, it goes back to the police work here. Because we knew there were many other people that had also been abducted during this event. It wasn't just our people. We were not exclusive in this. There were others present. Now, we know that. Obviously, when you tell a story like this, there are going to be all kinds of people writing and calling in saying, oh, I was there too. Really? Well, then you can tell us all about it. Now, tell us exactly what went on. Of course, we get these answers like there was a big council of people in long flowing robes sitting at this desk, and there wasn't. You just forget that. It wasn't anything like that. Nothing. So, nice try. If you were there, you can describe it, and you know exactly what happened. If you weren't there, you have to guess. So, but the important thing for me to relay to your audience is this. Number one, all the major players that people report in these events, they were present on that craft, or whatever it was. The second thing is that there were others higher than them running the show. And the regular guys that people often report, the Nordic, the Gray, and all these other types, they were subservient to and afraid of the entity that was sitting in the chair. And there were two of them, one in each different room. There was one in one room speaking to the lady that I gave the post-hypnotic suggestion for that seems to have activated this whole nasty event. And, of course, Dale was there. And, of course, the question should arise from your audience, why those two? What's the reason? Well, if you're an intelligence community, and we'll play this game real quick, if you don't mind.
Yeah, we've got about a minute.
Let's just assume for just a moment that Kevin has never been in the intelligence community or connected with it anywhere. It wasn't a cop or anything. It was just an average person. And all of a sudden, Kevin starts blurting out to me, who's in the intelligence community at the time, all kinds of secretive information. But he doesn't know what it means. Do you think you're going to be a person of interest for the intelligence community?
Absolutely.
I promise you, you will always be watched for the rest of your life. Well, this is tantamount to what happened. She blurted this out, so they've called her in on the carpet. And my senior investigator is the second person of importance, because if you want to find out what I'm doing, theoretically, you would go get my senior investigator. But since he's an abductee, I didn't bother to tell him what I was doing. I mean...
Oops, I cut you off too soon. Sorry. But we are into a break. And we will be back on the other side of this break. More from Daryl Sims, the alien hunter. And your telephone calls at 1-800-289-1092. We'll be back.
Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
And we are back. My guest is Daryl Sims. And Daryl, we have callers lined up, so let's go straight to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? You're not calling. All right. 1-800-289-1092 is the number to call. And we're talking with Daryl Sims, known around the world as the alien hunter. He is known as the alien hunter because he hunts for them by the evidence they leave behind. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. All right, nobody there. Daryl, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, let's try again with another caller. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Dick from Lebanon, Indiana.
Hello, Dick.
How you doing there, Kevin?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a comment first and a question for Daryl.
All right.
Okay, the comment is, if anybody wants a no bullcrap investigator, there's one right there for you. I have admired his work from afar for a long time. And this is a guy, when he tells you something's happening, it happens. And I don't even know this guy. I'd like to know him. And to Daryl.
Yes, sir.
You know your tip on the black light, you know, where you can check people if you get them in the first 24 hours before they take a shower?
Yes, sir, I do.
That works.
I'm glad you found something, and I hope that you'll go to our website and click on at alienhunter.org and click on my name there. If you don't have my address, I'd sure love to hear from you and love to hear what you found.
Let's put it this way. You can get in contact. Kevin knows who I am, and he'll give you my personal number.
Very good. That's fine.
And,
that's great.
And besides, I'd love to see that video. That just intrigues me to no end.
Well, it sounds like I'm going to have to make it available to Kevin so that we can put it up on the web or something.
Sounds like it. Yeah, I think it'd be a good idea.
There you go. There you go.
We have nothing to hide. Evidence is what it is.
Wonderful job. Good guess.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your call.
Thanks for the call, Dick.
You're welcome.
1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. And that's the toll-free number. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, yes. This is Kevin from Iroquois Falls.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how's it going? How's it going, Daryl?
Very good, sir.
Yes, you know, you're into a forensic investigation of UFOs and extraterrestrials. What I want to ask about is, you know, back, I believe it was in 2001, that we received the AirZero reply from what many believe are the Greys, and in it there was a helix, double helix of their own DNA. What I want to know is, in your forensic investigations, was there ever any DNA, alien DNA found that matched that alien helix? And I'll take your answer up the air. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Kevin.
Great question. I wish we had a piece of alien DNA. We haven't received anything from a Gray yet. Nobody's donated anything, so I guess I'm going to have to go out and catch him and get a piece. But the fact is that we are doing several investigations on DNA levels right now. One of them has to do with what an individual has described as a tall alien entity resembling a reptile. And the good news about it is that the evidence, the photographs taken in the snow of this thing shows some very unusual tracks and very large tracks and very distant tracks, several feet apart as opposed to humans. And the most interesting thing about it is it seems to have left some evidence there, and the evidence of which has been turned over to me. So we are going to do DNA evidence on that, but we're going to take a very nestled approach to this. In other words, first of all, we're going to identify what it is. I mean, it is not beyond the possibility of someone faking this or faking it for someone to find.
So your witness actually thinks it was real.
There were two people that were witnesses to the event.
Mm-hmm. But you're saying it's not beyond the possibility of someone faking it for them, making them think it's real.
That is very true. Some of the more interesting aspects of that was that it was looked at by a scientist and who did put a biological substance on one part of the sample, and it became almost immediately alive with I won't say what he saw and what I'd seen on the film, but I'll just say that it definitely has activity. Now, is that normal? Is it not normal? Now, that I don't know. It seemed to startle him, but again, I am not qualified to say whether what it is or not. So we're going to the labs first to identify if anything in the animal kingdom fits this material, and then second, what is it that's activated due to this biological chemistry that goes on?
All
so
right.
We're really
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Ryan in Washington State.
Yes, Ryan.
Have you ever looked into looking in the ocean underneath the sea floor? You know, I always thought about our planet is mostly covered with water. I mean, what if you were to take all the water out of the ocean? Can you imagine the kind of things you would see?
Oh, I agree with you. It is the last place that we have not explored, really, to any real degree.
Yeah, you know, I would imagine there would be some things down underneath the. I know there's lots of people that have gone and explored, you know, most of the ocean. But as far as it would be a really difficult task. But below the seafloor, who knows what you'll find down there? Nobody's really checked on there before.
Well, you're right, Ryan. And in fact, you know, if we just explored what's on the seafloor, I think we might be astounded if we could really get a good picture of that. Ryan, I thank you for the call from Washington State. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 1-800-289-1092. It is toll-free throughout all of North America. That's the United States and Canada. It's toll-free. And if you live outside of the United States and Canada, in other words, you live outside of North America, you can still participate in the show at no cost to you by sending me an email. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com with your questions or comments. I'll read them and we'll get Daryl to respond to them. But if you're inside of North America, use the telephone number. It's toll-free. I pay for the call. There's really no reason for you not to use it. 1-800-289-1092 is the number. Daryl, talk to us a little bit about this handprint. In the email you sent me today, there are pictures of it. And there's even a picture of you holding your hand up next to it so that we can compare size. What is that?
This is a case that I have up in Pennsylvania. It is a remarkable case involving an all-black family, friends of mine who are, it to me, is as credible as any other abductees I've ever met or had the privilege to know in my entire life. I was called to the case some time ago, by Brian Vike, by the way, who said, you know, we've got a, somebody had called in, he said, and I didn't know what to do with it. He said, there appears to be physical evidence on the wall, and I didn't know who to call, so he said, you're the only one I know that has that kind of a background and could do this, and so he called me. I flew up there, met with the family, found the majority of the family to be, I just love this description, they are salt of the earth, God-fearing, honest, credible people that anybody in that in our audience would love to meet and have as friends. I mean, they're just overwhelmingly good people in every sense of the word. And the amazing thing is that they're multiple abductees, and everyone, with the exception of the father, who happens to be a minister, is an abductee in the family. Now, the amazing thing about that is that the grandmother has kept all this information away from the other children, the grandchildren, and so on. The reason is because she doesn't want the information tainted. And of course, when I got there, I was elated to see this. The little girl, however, the granddaughter, describes in great detail the size of the entities that come in the room of her uncle. That's the oldest young man that's involved in the event. And she describes exactly what their hands look like and drew this for me in great detail. She's never been allowed in the room since those events started. So she doesn't have any clue or any knowledge about it. The amazing thing, and this is reflected in the sheetrock, piece of sheetrock, the wall, part of the wall, I literally cut out of the off of the wall of the home and took with me at their permission and with their blessing. The sheetrock shows a large handprint about 2 inches larger than my own, and my hands are huge. And this handprint apparently was from the entity leaning against the wall, and it left a, for lack of a better term, a bit of sweat that seemed to penetrate the sheetrock. Well, naturally, I'm going to take that material with me. I'm not going to leave it present there.
Are you going to have it tested for DNA?
We absolutely. First of all, there was a forensic psychiatrist present at the second time I went up there with a film team to film this. And he was going to be the critical part of the analysis of the review of all the people involved. And I took a DNA sample, and here's how I do this sort of thing, and I give you every opportunity to change your story. So I'm looking at the young man, and we're in his room, and the cameras are going, and I'm standing there, and I'm looking at him, and I said, I'm fixing to go over there and take a sample. A DNA sample or whatever's on that wall is going to come back with me if it's DNA or whatever it is. He said, yes, sir. And I said, you know, if I go over there and I come back and find that there's hair lotion or something on that wall instead of what you purport it to be, now would be the time to change your story. I'm giving you the opportunity to opt out of this thing before you get really, really embarrassed, because whatever the tests are going to show, that's going to be what comes out of the burning bush. And he said, I have no change in my information at all. He said, I only told you what happened, and I gave him every opportunity. He would not take it. And this is the kind of evidence. This is the kind of abductee I like to meet, because these people are not afraid of what they saw, what happened. They know what happened to them as best they can describe, and they're totally truthful about it. And they know I'm going to catch them in the analysis of this, in these investigations, if they're lying.
All right, so, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Mark from Nashport, Ohio.
Okay, Mark, speak up good and loud for us. We can barely hear you.
All righty. Daryl, you know Dr. Stephen Greer has identified hundreds of highly credible witnesses from the government, the military, and defense contractors that have all testified to the reality of the UFO phenomena. In addition,
yes, I do.
Ted Phillips and Dr. J. Allen Hynek have identified over 3,000 trace elements cases. My question to you is, in your opinion, what will it take to wake up Joe Sixpack and Sally Soccer Mom to the reality of the UFO phenomena? I will take the answer offline.
Certainly. We may all differ as to what we're going to ultimately accept as evidence or even proof, certainly. But for the average person, and this is just my take on it, I think you're going to have to toss body on the table, show them a UFO or that sort of thing, and have the government stand there with red faces. That's short of that, I don't think, other than in the next 50 years of continuous exposés of amazing scientific and medical evidence that's coming forward, not only in our cases but others, where we've even done 23 surgeries removing objects from these people, I don't think that the world is going to be educated much better unless we just continue to pound at this thing and come up with even better and better evidence. But by and large, the best way I can explain this to you was when I went to Brazil. There is a lady there who headed probably some of the greatest research ever done in South America, and her name is Irani Granci. And I met her in Brasilia for one of the largest conferences ever held on the planet. And she looked at me, and she gave me this wonderful compliment. She said, if it hadn't been for you, she said, there would be no science. And I said, well, that's not true. I said, there are others who have tried to bring science to this. And she says, no, she said, not in the way you have. She said, you discovered fluorescence, you discovered this, you discovered that. And I said, you're the pioneer down here. You're long before I was, you know. And she said, no, you're missing the point. We recorded information. We took their stories. We listened to them. We cried with them. We did these things. But there was no science. She said, and you have brought this to us since the early 90s. And she said, and I just want you to know, and I acknowledge it. So it just told me that this is probably the right way to go. We're going to have to bring, the only way you're going to bring the mainstream science or anything like that, or government or anybody into this, is we're literally going to have to put it on the table and in a format that they will accept. The concept forensics it basically means a public forum. And in other words, all can look at it and see the evidence. And that's what we're going to have to do. And for the most part, the UFO community hasn't produced that. We just haven't. We've got stories and we've got witnesses and so on. And we've also got some liars out there, too, that are just flat infiltrating some of our ranks, telling some whoppers. And it gets us a huge black eye every time they get caught.
And they will get caught.
Oh, and
they will get caught.
Several more of them in the next year or so, I can tell you. And it's going to stun you to find out who they are. It's just going to happen.
All right, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Darryl. This is John in North Carolina.
Hi, John.
Oh, sir. Yeah, I've got a question for Darryl. Darryl, what is your take on the Stephenville, Texas UFO sighting down there? You know, to me, that is one of the most realistic sightings that I've ever heard of. I believe, actually, I believe he was a constable. I believe that guy was telling the truth.
Did you listen to the show when he was on with me?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I did. And I believe every word he said. How about you?
I found him to be most credible.
Yeah, are you familiar with it, Darryl?
Yes, I am familiar with it. I live here in Houston, and I have not gone up to Stephenville to investigate the cases because I simply was literally on tour at the time, so I was not able to go up there. Otherwise, I would have been in Stephenville. But from the cases that I did see the reports on and from the interviews that I saw and the evidence that I saw and a couple of people that were actually involved I talked to, from what I heard and Kevin's presentation there, I think is excellent of it. The case is quite real. This is amazing to all of us because here's this wonderful case coming out of normal Nowhereville. Of course, to me, as an abduction investigator, here's the big question I have for Stephenville. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Why Stephenville? Why were they there with a craft that huge in Stephenville? What were they looking for? Who were they looking for? What the real story, in my view, hasn't even been told because the questions haven't been asked. All we've asked is, you know, there it is, and wow, what do you think, what do you feel, and so on, and are you credible? Okay,
uh-huh.
All that's true. It still begs the huge question, why was it there?
Good question. John, thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092, toll-free throughout all of North America. If you have a question or a comment for Darryl Sims, that's the number to call, and it doesn't cost you anything. Or you can send me, if you are outside of North America, send me a Flash message. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com, and I'll read it to him. He can comment on it. And we'll all enjoy the answer. All right, now, Darryl, you ask, I think, a very good question. Why Stephenville? Let me ask you, have you done any speculation about why Stephenville?
I'm so glad you asked. Actually, we had a wonderful presentation back in early 1991, I think it was. John Schuster, the former president of MUFON, came up to Houston and gave us a wonderful story about the late 1800s stories about UFOs that came over. They were called the airships back then.
Mm-hmm.
They came over various places in Texas area, and this went on for a period of time, and then they just disappeared. Nobody knows. And after his presentation, I mean, he documented it perfectly. There's no question. There were thousands and thousands of witnesses. And I asked him, he asked me if there were any questions at the end. He said, you know, they're really, he said, this is fun stuff to study. He said, but it really doesn't mean anything because there's nothing you can do about it. That was 1800s. There's nothing, late 1800s. There's nothing you can do. There's no way to verify, blah, 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 blah. All we have is these witness testimonies, and it's, that's all. And he said, is there any comments or questions? I said, I have a comment. He said, what's that, Daryl? And I said, my comment to you, sir, is this. I said, we may have missed a huge issue. He said, what's that? I said, what it is that why were these UFOs coming around certain cities in the 1800s and specifically leaving the indication or the screensaver memory, in my view, that they were in fact airships when the fact is they were not? And he says, what do you mean? He said, how would we check that, Daryl? And I said, has anyone ever done a study of the relatives of the people who saw those UFOs and may have in fact been abducted and contacted the relatives of these people and their children and so on to see if there were any abductees that came out of that? He just stood there and says, oh my God, we missed it. We missed the whole thing.
So you think maybe there's kind of a genealogy connection?
Absolutely. There's every evidence to support this from cases we have back in the reportedly by abductees, grandparents, by their relatives as far back as the 1800s, late 1800s. And to wit, this very day, a friend of mine sent me some carvings from Indian carvings that he found himself, no one else had apparently seen, and he showed them to me, and we discussed them all day long, and I'm telling you that I was just stunned when I looked at them. One of them shows a goat being hauled off by a flying craft. Another one...
And these are ancient carvings.
Yeah, well, they're at least in the 1800s, and there are other carvings that show other things, and some of them as late as the time of when the railroad apparently was present, one of the carvings, because it actually shows a UFO near what looks like a railroad track. But the point is, it also shows other people, apparently some of the Indios, the Indians themselves, being victims of these abductions as well. Not only them, but the animals they apparently raised.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
Good.
Good. I had a question for Daryl. The abduction phenomenon, it's always intrigued me as far as, is the human body trying to repress the trauma that's happened to these people, or is there actually a program put in place by the abductors to block out what's taken place, or is it they've tried to block it out and the human body is just rejecting it? And I'll just listen to my answer off the line.
Well, you bring up
wonderful series of questions. Oh, I just love these type questions. You are either intuitive or well-read or well-thought. The point is that they do install a program in these abductees. Usually if they place their large black eye in front of your face with you sitting there freaking completely out, and they install what is referred to as a screen memory, and the screen memory is the true false memory that some of the debunkers talk about, but it is for real. It is a false memory, and unfortunately, many of the contactees buy into it. They think they were in the school of higher consciousness or whatever the whopper is that they lead
you on to
believe.
Now, how do you know they weren't now, Daryl?
Well, we worked with a number of these contactees. In fact, Dr. John Mack and I had this discussion in Istanbul, Turkey. He said, well, I'm fascinated to see your evidence and ours. He said, one of the things that I would love to have you answer is why you tend to find abductees and we tend to find contactees in our events. And I said, well, Doc, I said, it doesn't stand to reason, does it? Whatever is out there is whatever is out there. I said, it has to do with the process that either you or I are doing that's inconsistent or incorrect. And he said, could you give me an example? And I said, I certainly can. I said, these people are all given screensaver memories in almost every case. I said, you, sir, are hypnotizing the screensaver. And the person is literally parroting the whopper that was shown to them or told to them. I said, it's interesting to me that I've worked with these people, and I can find that story, which I know is inconsistent and incorrect, because there are techniques that we use to determine this, and evidence as well, by the way. And whenever we find the real story, I said a huge amount of body memory and trauma comes as a result of it. I said, when someone's standing there calmly telling you, I'm in the school of higher consciousness and I'm having a great time here, learning all kinds of wonderful things from them, they're helping me to absorb these wonderful things, and so on. That sounds great. But the problem is, if you were actually taken on an alien craft and all these things done to you, do you think you might be a little more excited about being in the school of higher consciousness? Or do you think there might be something else going on? Yep.
All right. We have to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. We'll continue with Daryl Sims and the School of Higher Consciousness. And we also will continue with your telephone calls at 1-800-289-1092.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We're talking with Daryl Sims, and we're talking about the whole phenomena of extraterrestrials and
forensic evidence pertaining thereto. When we went away, I had asked the question, you know, how do you know that, you know, when people claim that they're in a school of higher consciousness, how do you know that they're not? I want to come back to that, but I want to take this phone call first. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Yes, Brent.
Daryl, I have a question for you. Let's say they are aware of what you're doing. Have you had any backlash? And I'll take it off here.
Boy, what a great question. Wow. And I hope we get to that other part. I've got a wonderful answer for you. Well, yes, we've had some backlash. We've had backlash in two ways, one from them and one from some boys from the Alphabet Soup community of intelligentsia. Normally, we don't have that kind of interference, but on rare occasions we do. But for the most part, from the entity themselves, the mass abduction, as I was describing, was in fact their response to us. In other words, a piece of their information that was intelligence level got out and parroted by someone who was an abductee, a contactee, someone who, a very dear friend of mine, who loves these guys, who thinks they're actually okay and fine, and that's fine for her to think that. We never argue about it. That's a viewpoint, and I do not argue it. In her circumstance, they knew she didn't have any knowledge whatsoever, any of this type of information. How could she possibly have gotten it? The one problem we had with the program was that she said one thing in her presentation, her statement to the entity, abducting entity, that got me caught. And the answer was, the last thing she said was, "Daryl knows what you're doing." She said he was horrified. She said, "I was living in Florida, and they didn't think I had any more contact with you in Houston. And he asked if I was still in contact with you." Said he knew exactly who you were. And I said, "Well, we already know that. And if our information is correct, that would be reasonable to know." And she said something quite startling. She blurted out the information, said he was mortified. And as a result, the mass abduction took place. Now, what this simply means in a nutshell is we created a good Manchurian candidate. It worked. They responded for the first time in history that we know about to a UFO researcher by us planting a good contactee Manchurian candidate volunteer for this program. They wanted to know specifically what I was doing, how I was doing it, and how this all came to pass. They wanted to know who was in on it. And they were mortified to find out that nobody knew. And especially the engineer that was there, and she was in the other room speaking to another guy that looked very, very similar to this one, to the one that questioned my senior investigator. So this whole thing was just stunning to us. And it was, again, if the size of the craft is important and the fact that all the abductees described, they said there's something wrong. Every one of them said the same thing. There's something wrong. There's a huge sense of urgency tonight. It's as if an admiral had come on board the craft, and there couldn't be any mistakes this time. That's all they knew. They didn't know what was going on. They had no clue. But that was a normal response from these abductees.
Daryl, the bit of information that accidentally got out to you that was intelligence-level information on the ETs, and we're talking about their intelligence, I know, even if I asked, I know in advance you're not going to tell us what it is, but let me ask the nature of it. Is it of a military nature, a biological nature? Does it have to do with their agenda? What is it about?
It had to do with their agenda. And obviously, for obvious reasons, I can't discuss what. But the fact is, it did have to do with their agenda. And to our shock and amazement, we did not know there was going to be a response. In fact, how would we know that there was going to be a response? So the way we knew about it was all of our abductees report being taken on December 8th and December 11th. One of them I talked to, an implant fell out of her eye in front of her boss at work on the morning of December 11th after the mass abduction. And she was going to sweep it off into the carpet. She said, it's probably a grain of sand or something. It's just a seed or something. It was in my eye all night. I don't know what it is. And her boss, who had talked to me before, said, no, I want to see that. She said, it's just a grain of sand or something. It's been in my eye all night. It's been keeping me awake, and it's hurting. And she keeps trying to sweep it away because abductees are programmed, and I use this word, programmed to destroy or get rid of evidence. And her boss said, if you sweep that off in the carpet and don't let me look at it, and don't take it to that investigator friend of yours, I'll fire you today. And she was scared and for her job. And they put it in a little container, brought it to me, and it appeared to be a ceramic housing of something that housed, according to her, a biological camera. Apparently they were watching some of our meetings between December 8th and December 11th, if the story is true.
A biological camera.
Yes. She felt like somebody was watching us through her, but she couldn't figure out how. Whenever she brought the object to us, I had it tested at the electron microscopy at the superconductivity lab at the University of Houston. And they described, and I had an entomologist there, obviously, not like you need a PhD to determine this. I had a PhD entomologist there and a PhD specifically to tell me, is this a seed? No, it isn't. Okay, and then had the entomologist there. Is this an egg of an insect? No, it isn't. Electron microscopy, we moved into that, and it showed that the material was ceramic in nature, was quite durable, and it seemed to be housed, according to the scientist who was doing this, he said it seems to house, to be a housing for something. And of course, he had no idea this thing came out of a lady's eye after a mass abduction on a craft of immense size. We just didn't tell him this.
And so was he able to determine what was inside of it?
There was nothing inside of it. Whatever had been in it was removed. In his opinion, just by looking at what the object was, he said, it seems to me this is the housing for something. And he said, and I don't know what, but it's quite durable. And he said, he gave us all the constituents, all the items that were involved in the process of the makeup of the ceramic covering, which looks like a little tiny egg with the end of it cut off.
Hmm.
But in his opinion, it was a housing for something. And I use the word housing, and I'm putting words in his mouth here by saying this, perhaps for a camera. But it was a housing. It was a housing-like material, very durable. And of course, he said, "Where'd you get this?" And I said, "Well, I really can't tell you that. The lady just gave it to me, and that's all I know." And of course, I was lying about that. I didn't want him to know. For we just don't want these people to know anything. We just want the data from them. That's all.
Now, well, in fact, if you were to tell them, then you would not get straight raw data. You would get slanted stuff.
That's correct.
Yeah, in many cases. In many cases, that's true. Folks, the telephone number is open at 1-800-289-1092. If you have a question or a comment for the alien hunter, Daryl Sims, now would be a good time to call, 1-800-289-1092. The reason I say that is because there's enough time between now and the next break for you to ask your question or make your comment and get him to respond. Higher Consciousness School. How do you know they're not attending? Because we've had a lot of people have called this show and have talked about going to that school.
Yes, understood. Understood. And they may have. I wasn't there, so I don't know about their particular case. But I do know about similar stories where they come back with this higher school of higher understanding. One of them is a semi-famous doctor's wife over in Slovakia. I worked with her. She asked me if I could work with her. She spoke very little English. And I said, yes. And her husband said, oh, my goodness, this is going to be wonderful. I want to watch. And she looked at him with this horror on her face and says, you're not going to be present. The translator's not going to be there unless Daryl needs him. And she said, this is so private, I don't want anybody to know. And she said, and it's taken me years to get to the point where I want to know. I said, what is it that you don't know? And she says, I know what I was caused to believe with great emotion. I said, and what was that? And she said that I was in the school of higher consciousness. I said, okay, maybe that's true. She says, it may be. She said, that's why I need somebody here that knows what you do and can do what you do. And she said, I understand you know how to determine whether people are lying or telling the truth by watching them. I said, yes, ma'am. I said, I've also looked at your handwriting. And I've also learned a great deal about you just through that. And she said, then we're ready. And I said, yes, ma'am, we are. And to the surprise of the of the translator, I didn't need him for very much. It was really amazing. But the point is that as she's standing there shaking, I mean literally shaking, and I said, what's going on? She said, it's just wonderful. It's wonderful. Yet her physiology tells me something totally, totally different. And I said, that's great. That's great. Do you notice anything at all happening there where you're at?
Daryl, we got about 10 seconds. Let's do this after the break. Okay?
Sure.
All right. All right, folks, we have to take a break. And when we come back, we will be on Final Approach. We'll still take your calls or your flash messages for Daryl. Telephone number is 1-800-289-1092. Or you, if you're outside of North America, you can send a flash message to flash@kevinsmithshow.com. We'll be back.
Set on making some noise. She came by way of Ibiza, a bachelorette, her suitcase packed full of toys. She'd been to faraway places, but she'd been living so high on that hog. The aeroplane was ascending. That's when she heard it, the screams and the noise. Now there ain't no ambulance on the way. Ooh. And she just can't help from thinking. Ooh. If there's no heaven, there'll be no hell to pay.
You know, there's never been a better time for you to start your own broadcast. I know there are a lot of paranormal investigators. I know there are a lot of people who are paranormal experiencers who want to have their own broadcast. Well, now you can, right here at Steel Eye Media Network. It is within your grasp. You can do it, and we're waiting to hear from you. Give us a call today at 1-800-318-1008.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back, and we're talking with Daryl Sims. And, Daryl, I want you to go ahead and tell us the rest of that story about the lady who was in the School of Higher Consciousness.
We do have a caller on hold, but I want to hear what happened here.
Very good. I'll make this brief. The best way to describe this is in the mass abduction there, I mentioned to you there are 8 of our abductees were present in that event. One of the most startling things I've ever heard in any of these events happened at that time. Just as they were preparing them to leave, the entities gave them all an opportunity to choose their own screensaver memory. In other words, you're not going to remember what really happened. One lady claimed, she said, she started crying. She said, I saw my deceased brother there, and we were talking, and it was wonderful. You don't really believe that her deceased brother is wandering around on a spacecraft out in outer space, 600 miles across, 50 miles thick. Another one comes up with she's walking her dog and shopping. I doubt that there's a shopping mall aboard this so-called alien craft. And so on.
If there is, there's probably a Walmart there.
I suspect that may be where they came from. The point of the matter is that we had 8 different people giving us 8 different stories. Now, you're a trained police officer. If somebody watches a crime or tells you a story and you're investigating a criminal event, a murder as an example, and all of a sudden you get 8 witnesses and they tell you 8 totally different stories, I can tell you what's going to happen to at least 7 of them. First of all, they're all going downtown, and 7 of them are going to be arrested for lying to a police officer. That's going to happen. The fact is, a murder doesn't happen 8 different ways. Either you didn't see it, the first 7 didn't see it, or they saw it incorrectly, or some other explanations there. But it's highly likely that if one says he was stabbed to death, another one says he was shot to death, another one says acid was thrown in his face, and so on and so on, it's likely that that is not the true story. So here we have 8 different stories, all of them not true, every one of them.
All right. Well, that's that makes sense, you know. And you know, if the story has been cohesive from 8 different witnesses until the ending, and then it just explodes into 8 different stories at the end, something happened at the end. That makes sense. All right. Let's go to the phone line, caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Darren from Michigan.
Yes, Darren.
Yeah, I wanted to get Daryl's opinion. What's his overall opinion of these beings, you know, overall? And second question, what do you think their end game is? What's their prime objective?
All right, Darren, I want to thank you for the call. Go ahead, Daryl.
That worked for me. First of all, they will not tell us what their end game is. In the mass abduction, something staggering happened to my senior investigator. He was taken by the Nordic type being. He said, and I was taken to this area, this room, and he said, Daryl, he said, there was a map. He said, I don't want to call it a map because that's not probably what it was. He said it was a three-dimensional, strange-looking thing that was or had a frame around it. That it, he said, for lack of a better term, looked to me to be a map. And he said the thing looked like a gigantic, and he laughed because he's an engineer, very methodical, and this made no sense to him. He said it looked like a gigantic racetrack, and he said, and I got the distinct sense that that was their involvement with us for the last 6,000 years. He said there was one little section that wasn't finished. He said, I sit there and looked at that while he was doing what he was doing, and I calculated, being an engineer is what he does, and he said it looked like to me the last little space, that last 100 years, had not been completed, whatever that means. So according to him, based on what he saw there, it in fact was a roadmap of their whatever their involvement is with us. The second question, do I like them or what do I think of them? Well, first of all, anybody that comes in my room and takes me at age 3 and a half and does things they did to me, and I have not had hypnosis or memory recovery to recall my events. I remember a lot of my events consciously and have the marks to bear to prove it. My point is that many other people have had similar experiences, but when they came after my children and got my son, the world changed for me. And there, it's no longer an interesting or amazing story. They became predators at that point for me in every sense of the word, and then it just changed. I became the predator. Now I hunt them that hunted me and hunted my son. So I don't have a very high opinion of anybody that does that. It's still kidnapping any way you want to call it. I don't like it. I don't think, and to offset this in another direction, we've actually had, and this is very rare to happen, but it has happened, and with good witnesses involved, amazing stuff, there in rare cases have actually been angelic interference and abductions, which is very rare. But when that happens, the alien can't get out of the area quick enough, and I mean all of them. And that told me a lot about if I had any doubts as to the problem with these guys and that are they in cahoots with anybody out there really good, that kind of negated it for me. It doesn't mean that some of them are not happy with what's going on and that they approve of everything that's going on. I actually think, and I think we have evidence from it, and one of them is from the mass abduction. Again, one of the entities there was not playing good cop, bad cop. He literally was protecting one of my abductees. And of all things, he was a reptile. Made no sense to us whatsoever.
Now, that's an interesting twist.
Stunning. And he knew that I would find this out. He had to know. And I think he wanted me to know that. But these guys, these reptiles, are not friendly characters when they show up in the literature. They're pretty horrific.
Daryl, we've got just a couple of minutes here until the end of the show. Tell us the name of your book.
My book is called Alien Hunter, Evidence in Light. And it looks at evidence in physical light, the infrared, ultraviolet, and X-ray, and what we've found in every one of those realms. And it's a decent account of the way a person can go and look at their own events and even document their events by using this book. You don't have to be a scientist or a cop to document your own evidence and to know what to look for. You just have to know somebody that already did do that and follow the pattern.
Now you've just come back from conference that had nothing to do with the alien subject or the UFO subject, but you do speak at conferences all over the world. Do you have any coming up in the near future that we need to know about?
Well, we've got some conferences that we're putting together in a couple of different countries right now, and this we hope it'll happen this year. If not, it'll happen next year for sure. Where I'm working on these very hard. The thing that's keeping me here more than anything is the fact that we've got so much evidence literally piled up here that I'm processing it as fast as I can. As I've mentioned, some of the so-called reptile evidence that we have that we're looking at. We also have some implanted evidence that we're sending off to a lab to check isotopic ratios or the signatures of those things. And so there is just so much that we're doing right now. I want to stay on top of this more than I want to speak.
Now, and we've got 20 seconds left, and in that 20 seconds, tell us again your web address.
Web address is alienhunter.org, and you can get in touch with me, and I answer all my emails simply by clicking on Alien Hunter, and it'll send an email to me.
All right, good enough. Stay on the line with me for a moment, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, there it is. That is the end of this show. It's a wrap. I wish we had more time, but we don't.
I want to thank Daryl Sims for being with us. I want to thank each of you for listening, and every one of you who called in, thank you so much for taking an interest and participating. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. I'll be back tomorrow. So long, everybody.